from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There are just 15 days to go before the election. Over the past weeks, On Point has been digging into some of the key issues in the campaign. We've compared the Bush and Kerry plans for the economy and health care and more. It's time to look at the issue that could decide the election, Homeland Security. Tonight on Point, drawing up an election eve report card on America's homeland security post 9/11, assessing the Bush record and the Kerry promises. But first, poll numbers from likely voters are keeping both campaigns on their toes. A Washington Post poll finds John Kerry closing to within 3 points of George Bush. USA Today finds Bush opening a fresh lead. Susan Page is Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. I asked her what she's seeing in the numbers.
Well, we're seeing some good news for President Bush. He's back up with an 8-point lead among likely voters, a 3-point lead among registered voters. Things have returned to just where they were before that first debate.
And how does this compare with what people are finding right across the spectrum? I'm looking at a Time magazine poll that has Bush up by 2. You guys have him up by 8. How do we account for this big disparity?
You know, that isn't really a very big disparity given the margin of error. What we've seen in all the national polls except one is movement to Bush since the last debate. Some people have him up 2 points or 4 points or 6 points or 8 points. I think what's important is not the number of points. I mean, this is not exactly a science, the science of polling. It's more of an art. But I think what's important to look at is who has the momentum. And I think it's pretty clear that President Bush has at least a little momentum going into the final 2 weeks of the campaign.
And still, the difference between an 8-point lead and a 2-point lead, it's not a science, but 8 is not within the margin of error.
8 is within the margin of error. There's
really?
A 4-point margin of error for the likely voter sample. So 8 points get you right on the edge of the margin of error. If you're looking at registered voters, the margin of error gets smaller, 3 points. So the 3-point margin among registered voters is clearly within the margin of error. But the 8-point is as well. It's just kind of on the edge of where it begins to be statistically significant.
And what did you see when you look beyond the national numbers and into swing states? Is it the same story or something different?
When we have pulled out the responses we get from people in battleground states, we find that Senator Kerry does 2 or 3 points better than he does in the nation as a whole. So a slightly better picture in the states that will really determine the election.
Now, if that's the case, could that mean a Kerry victory in spite of what you're showing is an 8-point Bush lead nationally if he's leading by 2 or 3 points in key swing states?
He's not leading by 2 or 3 points in key states in swing states. He's doing 2 or 3 points better.
Oh, I see.
In swing states than he is doing nationally. You know, it's a mistake, I think, to look at these polls and think they predict what's going to happen in the election. They're really a snapshot, and this is a snapshot of how the electorate looked on Friday and Saturday after the third debate. It shows a little bit about the mood of the country, how Republicans are feeling. They felt kind of good after the third debate. The Democrats feeling maybe just a little bit more discouraged than they were a week earlier. But we shouldn't look at these and say, this tells us how the election is going to come out. That said, if right before the election, President Bush has an 8-point lead nationally, I think that is a big margin for Senator Kerry to make up in battleground states.
And how do you interpret this, Susan, given the kind of ebb and flow of numbers here? If it's back to the pre-debate status, what do you make of that?
I think it means that there needs to be some intervening event to get Senator Kerry back as a candidate with momentum. You need a news development that puts President Bush on the defensive or really helps Senator Kerry. Or you need President Bush to make some kind of error on the stump, some kind of misstatement that causes him trouble. Because if nothing happens in the next 2 weeks, I'd say that President Bush looks like he's in pretty good shape. That said, we've never gone 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks of a campaign, and have nothing happen.
And are you still looking into the issues, in particular national security? How does that show up on the poll responses?
You know, I think that that's what has helped President Bush. We see that people in this poll were more likely to say terrorism was the number one issue. 32% say terrorism is the most important issue in determining their election. Terrorism is the issue on which President Bush has his biggest advantage over John Kerry. So in terms of President Bush's reelection, that's good news for him. Senator Kerry would be helped if people were saying, more people started to say that the economy and health care were the most important issues to them, because those are issues on which he has a big advantage.
So here we are, 2 weeks to go. Momentum to Bush, at least in your poll, but as you say, it's art, not science, and we bear that in mind.
Momentum to Bush, but still a close race, and not a race that's over yet.
Susan Page, thanks for joining us.
Tom, you're welcome.
Susan Page is Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. She spoke with me from Washington. In the Oval Office this morning, President Bush signed a bill giving the Department of Homeland Security $33 billion for its work in the next year. On a campaign stop in New Jersey, the president renewed his charge that a John Kerry administration would not act against terrorism until too late, and accused Kerry of having a pre-9/11 view of the world.
Most Americans still felt that terrorism was something distant and something that would not strike on a large scale in America. That is the time that my opponent wants to go back to. A time when danger was real and growing, but we didn't know it. A time when some thought terrorism was only a nuisance.
And campaigning today in Tampa, Florida, Senator Kerry fired back.
Mr. President, your management or mismanagement of this war, your diversion from Al-Qaeda and from Osama bin Laden, your shift of the troops to Iraq when there was nothing to do with Al-Qaeda, nothing to do with 9/11, has made America less safe, not more secure.
Both Bush and Kerry know homeland security is a key issue in this campaign, maybe the issue. In red, blue, and swing states, voters want to know how the two candidates plan to keep America safe from another terrorist attack. This hour, we're drawing up an Election Eve report card on homeland security, the Bush record, and the Kerry promise. You can join this conversation. Do you feel safer with each passing year since 9/11 or not? Do you see evidence the country has made itself more secure? Are you casting your vote on the issue of homeland security? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Daniel Prieto, Research Director of the Homeland Security Partnership Initiative and a fellow at the Belfer Center at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. In 2003 and 2004, he served on the Democratic staff of the House Select Committee on Homeland Security as a fellow of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's not an official advisor or surrogate of the Kerry campaign, but has spoken with him about homeland security for Truth in Advertising here. Daniel Prieto, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be here tonight.
And with us from Washington is Jack Spencer, Senior Policy Analyst in Defense and National Security at the Heritage Foundation. He is author of the Ballistic Missile Handbook and has studied America's ability to deal with a bioterrorist threat. Jack Spencer, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Great to be here.
So there's a lot on the table tonight, and it's very much in the air in the campaign today. Hard to separate homeland security from the war in Iraq, but we want to do a little bit of that, at least look at the home front, at least as we begin to wade into this. Daniel Prieto, the Bush administration says, we stood up after 9/11 and did everything that could be done for this country, and essentially nobody would have done a better job than we have. What do you make of the claim? When you just want to see the report card today, look out across the Homeland Security boardwalk. How has this administration done? Is America as safe as it ought to be since 9/11?
Tom, I don't think America is as safe as it ought to be. I think just out of the gate here, it's important to split the foreign policy aspect of the war on terror from the homeland piece, obviously.
You can't entirely unravel them, we'll give it a try at the top here.
You can't unravel them, and I think on its face, Bush's rhetoric goes so far because I think to most Americans, and even myself when I first thought about whether we were safer, there's a lot of things that point to us having made progress. In Afghanistan, we ousted oppressive rulers of a failed state who provided sanctuary to terrorists.
Yep, yep.
We deposed a murderous dictator in Iraq and captured and killed many of Al-Qaeda. But the strongest Bush argument on that case, that those foreign policy aspects have made us safer, in my mind, the judgment remains to be seen. It is not clear that we are safer. In both Afghanistan and Iraq, to be honest, you could claim that there is chaos, there is verging warlordism. In Iraq, we could end up managing a civil war for the next decade.
So on the foreign policy front, when you look out and say since 9/11, maybe not safer, but bring us to the domestic front.
On the domestic front, I think what's shocking to me, I think everyone in the administration is very serious about homeland security, but what's shocking are a lot of things that I consider low-hanging fruit, things that are easy to get done and things that surprisingly, and I think it'll surprise many of your listeners, have not gotten done.
Like?
For example, terrorist watch lists. This is one of the simplest things to do from a technology standpoint. It is a project that should take less than 6 months, less than a half dozen programmers, and less than a couple million bucks.
But we thought it was happening. Cat Stevens had his entire airplane diverted a couple of weeks ago.
It is happening, but we're now 3 years past 9/11. There is not a fully consolidated list. They have not accumulated all the information from across the government. It is not distributed and disseminated to all the folks that need it on the border and in consular offices in a real time. It should have been done a long time ago. And the only thing that's getting in the way is Washington's sort of bureaucratic politics, something that I think real leadership from the White House could have blown through by now.
So watch list, you're saying not there. What else is on your list?
Radiation detection portal monitors. Earlier in the debate...
Radiation detection portal monitors. That
yes.
means at ports.
At ports of entry. That is land, sea, and air.
To see if nuclear material is being brought into the country.
In cargo containers, in trucks, and things of that sort. In one of the debates, both... Senator Kerry and President Bush agreed that the most significant threat to this country in an age of terrorism is a nuclear device getting in the hands of a terrorist. At the same time, you can play offense and go get the terrorist, but even if one device slips through, you really need to play good defense here at home.
So what's happening on the radiation detection equipment?
The radiation detection equipment, the Customs Department has estimated that it will cost $495 million to put this type of equipment at every port of entry to the United States.
Has some been installed? Any? Some?
Some has been spent so far. $205 million has been spent so far, so some installations have occurred. What's disappointing in this last budget, the one that was approved today,
yes.
there's $290 million remaining to get this done. This is low-hanging fruit. This is easy to do. The technology is available. The president's budget request earlier was only $43 million, and only $73 million is in the appropriations bill. So the question is, I think, for the American people to ask, if this is the Homeland Security president and he is the one that's keeping us safer, why are they not doing what needs to get done here?
Okay, we'll come back and look at some more of your points. But Jack Spencer, I want to get you in here first at the top level, and then when we come to the domestic front, what grade do you give this administration so far, Jack?
Oh, I think it's a little too early to be giving grades. I think that what we're seeing now... I think it's a passing grade. I'll give them that.
Okay.
I think what we're seeing now, though, is the foundation being laid and the infrastructure being developed to have a secure homeland. This is definitely a work in progress. I think when you look at where we were prior to 9/11 and where we are today, there have been monumental shifts made toward in the right direction. Just standing up the Homeland Security Department, which brings all these disparate agencies throughout the federal government who had a multitude of tasks and responsibilities to bring their focus to Homeland Security, was a huge step in the right direction. We see now intelligence reform ongoing. And on the foreign policy side, that we are playing offense. Yes, we have to play defense, but offense is infinitely more important from my perspective in all this. So what we see happening, should we have radiation monitors on all the ports? Yeah, that's the objective. But the important thing is that they've got half of them there in the most at-risk places. Now, that said, if the terrorists know where the monitors are, they're going to go someplace else. So you need to really have a comprehensive approach. But what we've seen this administration do is to bring the federal government together, set it on a strategy, give it focus, and then moving forward to give us that comprehensive homeland defense that we ultimately need to have.
So you're saying don't get lost in the details. They're laying down the right infrastructure for security in the years ahead.
Exactly. I think that's very important. In some place where that's not happening is on the congressional side, where they can't get their congressional committee structure together in order to facilitate homeland security. There's too many turf wars going on in Congress. So by all means, this is not a finished fight. The administration, however, I do believe has made tremendous strides in the right direction and has done a lot that's right in the past 3 years.
But 3 years on, is it enough to be working with infrastructure? Shouldn't they have some of these things, terrorist watch lists, more radiation detection equipment, actually in place? Is that too much to ask, Jack Spencer?
I don't want to say it is or is not too much to ask. I'm not just artificially defending the administration.
Mm-hmm.
I really
Understood.
Think that it's a work in progress. That the yeah, if it was only infrastructure and there were no radiation detection devices out there to continue that example, yeah, that would be a problem. But there's not just infrastructure and there's not no radiation detection devices. We're moving in that right direction, and those things are coming into place. Now, if you listen to
Jack, stand by. We've got to take a short break here. We'll come back to you. We're talking tonight with Jack Spencer and Daniel Prieto. We're talking about an election eve report card on America's homeland security. You can join the conversation tonight. Do you feel safer with each passing year since 9/11 or not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This hour, we're drawing up an election eve report card on America's homeland security, assessing the Bush record and the Kerry promise. You can join the conversation tonight. Do you see evidence that the country has made itself more secure since 9/11? Has the Bush administration done all that reasonably could or should be done for homeland security? Does Kerry have a better plan? And are you casting your vote this year on the issue of security? Today, both candidates released new attack ads on their opponents' records on the war on terror and homeland security. We begin with the Bush ad.
After September 11th, our world changed. Either we fight terrorists abroad or face them here. John Kerry and liberals in Congress have a different view. They opposed Reagan as he won the Cold War, voted against the first Gulf War, voted to slash intelligence after the first Trade Center attack, repeatedly opposed weapons vital to winning the war on terror. John Kerry and his liberal allies, are they a risk we can afford to take today?
Now, Senator Kerry's ad.
In Iraq, American troops are attacked 87 times a day. At home, the Bush administration has acquired just 530 doses of licensed anthrax vaccine for America's civilian population. In Afghanistan, the Bush administration relied on Afghan warlords to go after Osama bin Laden. He got away. Bush said, "I don't spend that much time on him. I truly am not that concerned about him. It's time for a new direction."
I'm John Kerry, and I approve this message.
A John Kerry ad, a George Bush ad, both going at Homeland Security and both doing that on the hustings today. George Bush, very tough on John Kerry in New Jersey, and John Kerry firing right back. I'm joined tonight from Washington by Jack Spencer at the Heritage Foundation, and with me in the studio, Daniel Prieto from Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. Talk, Daniel Prieto, a couple things. First, in the ad, the line we hear repeatedly from the Bush camp, better to address the terrorists abroad than to have to face them here. And secondly, Jack Spencer's view here that, no, maybe not every little thing has been done, but the right infrastructure has been laid down, the right foundation for a secure future. Take those two on, if you would.
The first one, fighting terrorists abroad or face them here. We've heard that a lot from the administration. What's ironic about that statement is the fact that the administration itself doesn't seem to believe that. If they did believe that, then we wouldn't get consistent terror warnings from the Department of Homeland Security, from the FBI, from the CIA, that basically say that they believe a terrorist attack is imminent. They can't have it both ways.
Well, but I mean, you can be fighting abroad and still have a threat at home, but say on balance you're better off fighting abroad.
On balance, it may be true. It is true. You should fight strong offense. However, as football fans know everywhere, you need both strong offense and strong defense. And they frequently say defense wins Super Bowls. You have to have it both ways. And it's interesting, again, they sort of speak out of one side of the mouth and try to have it both ways. I don't think that's...
But then when the red or orange alert goes up, it's right here at our doorstep. What about the infrastructure question? Jack Spencer says, look, there's maybe he would say there's an infinite number of things that could be done.
Correct.
I suppose we could all agree. But they've laid down the right groundwork here, right or wrong.
Jack's right to some degree. The strategy documents from the administration are very strong. However, as a former mergers and acquisitions banker who's worked on $150 billion of mergers and acquisitions, strategy will die on the details. The devil is in the details. And again, there is a litany of low-hanging fruit that is just not getting addressed.
You named a couple with the watch list and radiation detection equipment, other things?
There are a couple more. I think Jack said heading in the right direction. I think bioterrorism, for example, the administration cut HHS funding 8% and CDC funding 11%. To deal with surge capacity, to deal with bioterror attacks for hospitals. That's not the right direction. Chemical security, there are 123 chemical facilities in this country that, if blown up, could threaten up to a million people. This administration has not pushed for legislation. Legislation on the Hill has now died for the second year without moving forward. 0% of air cargo is screened. And back on that bioterrorism point for a second, if we can't even get this flu vaccine right and people wait in emergency rooms with a cut finger for 4 hours to get treatment, do we think they're ready to deal with a major WMD attack?
If there were a bioterror Correct. Attack, could the hospitals even come Correct. Close to addressing it? Jack Spencer, the attack still here is on the details. That's where the devil may lie, the rubber meets the road, all the rest of that. If I'm hearing some agreement here. Daniel's saying, yes, we've got some infrastructure plans and beginnings correct, but you really need to be held accountable for what's happened in the detailed subcategories. How about that?
As I said before, I think the details are moving forward. It's not as if nothing has been done on those details. It's that some has been done and more continues to be done. Now, maybe we could funnel, you know, $1 trillion into Homeland Security and get more of those details done. But you know what would probably happen is we would get it wrong. A large part of getting the details right is having the infrastructure correct so that we're not wasting money, so that we're doing things the right way. And that's one thing that gets missed on a lot of these political in a lot of these political debates, especially whenever we're talking about presidential politics. Both sides, unfortunately, exaggerate the positions of the other, and that's just the reality. And we as American voters need to understand that, and we can't put too much, and I don't think we can put too much emphasis on, or we can emphasize too much, I should say, on these attack ads, because they're really irrelevant as far as I'm concerned. What we need to look at is the direction we're going, and that what the Bush administration has done so far. And you know what? I wouldn't even say that if John Kerry were elected, I don't think that his mistakes would necessarily be on the Homeland Security front. I think that what he might do is create a situation where local governments become too dependent on the federal government for things like fire engines that are often talked about, things like that.
Right.
Where the problem is on the foreign policy side. But I think that probably both John Kerry, if John Kerry were to be elected, he would take this infrastructure that was laid out, this foundation that was built by the Bush administration, and probably stick on the same sort of path.
That is the Department of Homeland Security and intelligence reform. What about intelligence reform in particular, Jack Spencer? That's had so much attention paid to it. John Kerry's been critical of the speed at which that's gone forward. Others say, you know, don't go too fast, be careful. Do you think the Bush administration is lining up to do the right thing on the intelligence side of this security question?
Yeah, I believe that this will be a bipartisan effort, not just the administration, but both political parties will do the right thing if they don't hurry it. The problem I see now is not on the executive branch side, regardless of party. It's on the congressional side, where you have these congressmen and senators who want to say they've done something so they can go home and get reelected. And this is a question that is so important that we shouldn't base it on presidential electoral cycles. Instead, we need to go slow and do the right thing. And I think it would be far better off for the long-term security of this country to wait till whoever is elected gets elected, they come back the beginning of next year, and they do the intelligence piece of this the right way. One thing we need to remember, when we did the Cold War, when we first confronted with the Soviet threat, we didn't just snap our fingers and come up with a plan and execute it in 6 months. It was something that took years and years to come up with, and then more years and years to start to implement. But we had that for the long term. They were the right strategies that were developed, the right infrastructure was in place, and it took a long time, but we won the Cold War, and we won it peacefully. I think that that's a good analogy in terms of whenever we have a seismic shift in our strategic security environment, that we can't just base these decisions on electoral election cycles. We need to take it slow, do the right thing, because the right decisions now can pay vast dividends in the future.
And yet American voters are sort of required by the structure we've got to assess, you know, how each administration has done in the time that it's had with the resources that it's had. We're trying to go down that checkbox tonight.
And they should be held accountable. If September the 11th happened and the Bush administration said, you know what, the structure in place was fine, we messed up this one time, but I'm confident that that what we have in place is workable, and just ignored the problem, that would be a problem. And here's a point where I think is significantly different between President Bush, it's a legitimate criticism of Kerry. It's this idea of him cutting the intelligence. He voted to slash intelligence multiple times in the post-Cold War era. The weapon system stuff, that's less important to me. But those intelligence cuts, those are what gave rise to a lot of the problems we have today.
Jack Spencer, stand by. Daniel Prieto, how about this issue of intelligence, the speed at which the Bush administration has begun to address clear intelligence failures pre-9/11, the structure that they appear to be steering toward, and what about John Kerry's record?
A couple things. I agree with Jack on the congressional side. That needs to be cleaned up and made more streamlined. And I also agree that we should not politicize everything just because it's the election cycle. In terms of intelligence reform, you know, the example I keep coming back to is terrorist watch list. Every commission since 9/11 has said this is a piece of low-hanging fruit. There's political will on both sides to get it done. It is technically easy to do. It's the poster child for intelligence
reform.
And
it's not done.
And it's not done. So you tell me how good that's going. Now, in terms of the overarching reform picture and the analogy that Jack drew to the Cold War, it's relevant to a point. But the whole point of being in this age of terrorism is that things happen so much faster. Before, you could see troops massing on the border, so you'd have a couple weeks notice. Then nuclear missiles, fine, you might have a couple hours or a couple minutes. We're now at the point in an era of globalization and when terrorists may be in our borders, you do not have the time. And therefore, to say that, oh, we can go along the same path as during the Cold War, we can do this over years, I don't think that's good enough. So the American voters have to ask themselves, looking at these low-hanging pieces of fruit, things where things have not been done.
Why aren't the chemical factories
protected?
Why aren't
they getting done, and how quickly should we demand our leaders to get this stuff done?
I want to begin to turn to our callers. Jonathan is calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi, Jonathan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
Yes, there seems to be a whole bunch of voters for whom safety is their number one priority. The common wisdom is that Bush is the candidate for these people. I remember when Reagan ran for re-election on Reaganomics, he asked, are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
Right.
And I wonder if Bush had the courage to ask us, are you safer than you were 4 years ago?
But that's a pretty tough question when you've got 9/11 sitting at the beginning of those 4 years, isn't it? I mean, isn't the question really, are we adequately, is our safety improved enough since 9/11?
Well, I guess that's one question, although we were hit under the Bush administration and to some extent.
Yeah, all right. I mean, yeah.
But in addition to that, since 9/11, Bush took Iraq from a stable dictatorship to a very unstable anarchy at a cost of about one-third of a 9/11 worth of soldiers.
Mm.
Secular Iraq had nothing to do with al-Qaeda, but now it does.
Mm-hmm.
We have this doctrine of preemption that sort of seems nice when you look at it from the American point of view, but that gives license to the rest of the world, which I think makes the planet much more unstable. Because of the Iraq invasion, we've got the Arabs and the Muslims hating us much more than they ever have, and they're breeding terrorists faster than we can catch them.
So when President Bush says, as he did today, and Dick Cheney, that John Kerry has a pre-9/11 mindset, how do you respond to that, Jonathan?
I'm much more afraid of Bush's post-9/11 mindset.
Because you don't think it's taking care of what needs to be addressed?
I it's worse than that. I think that he has taken us from a position where we're a citizen of the world as a country to where we're going to be the tough guy on the playground, and we're going to have everybody else on the playground against us.
Jonathan, thanks very much for your call. To respond to that, let me turn to Louise Richardson. She joins us from Winchester, Massachusetts. She's executive dean of the Radcliffe Institute for Advanced Study, an expert on international security and terrorist movements, author of 5 Degrees of Separation, Terrorists and Their Sponsors. Louise Richardson, thank you for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
You hear the critique from our caller. Jonathan says, look, I think President Bush has made us less, not more secure by putting a stick in Iraq. What's your assessment here? This seems to be core.
I must confess I have great sympathy with the points Jonathan was making. In essence, I think he's correct. President Bush has claimed to have killed 75% or captured 75% of the top al-Qaeda leadership. That may very well be true. The top al-Qaeda leadership in the person of al-Zawahiri, the number two, scoffs at this claim. But whether or not it's true, the fact is, as Jonathan pointed out, they're regenerating new recruits faster than we're killing them. So the fact that we may have killed large numbers of the leadership is not terribly relevant. We've seen in the personnel of some of the more recent attacks that they're managing to grow at an alarming rate. And they're growing in large part, I think, in reaction to our action in Iraq, which is winning new recruits for them. It's enabling them to make the case that our actions appear to square much more closely with the motives they attribute to us than with the principles that we believe we're defending.
But what about this core claim, and we hear it repeatedly, we heard it again today, that we're better off fighting the terrorists there than here? What do you make of that equation, Louise?
I don't think we have a choice as to where we fight the terrorists. They will fight us wherever they can. As we've heard earlier, we've been making it more difficult to attack us domestically. We've hardened a lot of targets, so they will, of course, choose softer targets. That's what terrorists historically have done. But I think the notion that because we're fighting them in Iraq, we're preventing them from attacking us here is palpably silly. There's no evidence in support of it at all. If they could attack us here and when they can, they will, irrespective of the fact that we're fighting in Iraq. The problem with fighting in Iraq is that it's allowing them to win more recruits. In listening to the conversation earlier, there's been a lot of sports analogy about offense and defense, mm-hmm. and it seems to me we're actually fighting this in the wrong pitch. It's not about offense and defense.
The wrong field. What do you mean?
We should be fighting, if I were making our strategy, which is apparent that I'm not, I think what we should be doing is trying to appeal to the potential recruits of the terrorists to ensure that these groups remain small, remain isolated, instead of becoming more popular, which is what's happening. They're becoming more popular again because our actions appear to square more with their view of us than with the principles we espouse and we claim to be defending. And I think the American people think we're defending, but looked at from the perspective of the ground in the Middle East, it doesn't look like we're defending them at all.
Jack Spencer, I know we've only got you for a couple more minutes. Take on this basic criticism that comes from the Democratic camp and some within the Republican Party, I guess, that the foreign policy is breeding more terrorists than it's mopping up, and we're ending up in a worse situation, in the red.
Well, I don't think we'll end up in a worse situation at all. I will concede, and I will agree that it's very possible that in the near term, we may see more terrorist attacks and attempts at us than if we had sat back and done nothing. That's because they see a real threat to their existence, and they look at this as their perhaps last opportunity to achieve what they want to achieve. If they sit back and do nothing, then they will certainly lose. Now, the facts remain that we did essentially sit back and do nothing throughout the 1990s as we were attacked time and time and time again. We continued to ignore it. We thought that the threat was not going to be that great. And this is in spite of numerous reports and numerous of studies that were done that said, look, terrorists are seeking to attack the American homeland and to do so on a mass scale.
But no one's suggesting do nothing now. The question is whether what's been done is pushing us toward nearer to a resolution or a better situation or further from it.
And I think we are clearly pushing towards a better situation because it's my belief that it's these dictatorships around the world that breed terrorism. And I think to the extent that we can help countries like Afghanistan and Iraq bring about representative democracy that's consistent with their cultures, with what they want, that we will find ourselves in a much better situation in the future. There's no doubt in my mind. And speaking as one of the silly people who believes that what we're doing in Iraq will bring about that better future, I think that whenever you look at what Saddam Hussein's history was with WMD, with terrorism, we keep hearing he didn't have any ties with al-Qaeda. He did have ties with al-Qaeda. He did not apparently have anything to do with 9/11. But That's not the strategic view we need to take. We need to look at these dictators and how they are using technology and the globalization of terrorism, be it al-Qaeda or otherwise, as ultimately as weapons, as means by which to attack the United States, our friends and our allies, and what they simply do not agree with in the world.
And yet it wasn't a dictator on 9/11. I'm sorry we have to leave you there, lose you, but I know we do. Jack Spencer at the Heritage Foundation, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Louise Richardson, Daniel Prieto, please stick with us. Listeners, you can join this conversation. We're talking about homeland security. How does a report card look for George Bush? How do you think John Kerry would do? Are you drawn to George Bush's endless war on terrorism or John Kerry's goal of reducing it to a nuisance? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about homeland security and the November 2nd election, looking at the Bush record and the Kerry promises. You can join our conversation. Do you feel safer with each passing year since 9/11 or not? Has the Bush administration done all that reasonably could or should be done for Homeland Security? Does Kerry have a better plan? Bottom line, all other issues aside, who gets your vote on Homeland Security and why? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight from the Radcliffe Institute for Advanced Study by Louise Richardson. And with me in the studio tonight, Daniel Prieto at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. You can join us as well, 1-800-423-8255. Michael is calling from Crab Orchard, Kentucky. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, my concern is that each of our candidates is pandering our fears. Our military budget is $450 billion.
Pretty substantial.
Battleships, missile defense, how does that help us battle terrorism?
So when you say pandering to our fears, give us the Bush pander, the Kerry pander.
The Kerry pander is that George Bush is not tough enough, and the Bush pander is that John Kerry is a waffling pander to our own fears. So it's they each pander to our own fear.
And there we've got it. Michael, thanks for your call. Daniel Prieto, how about it? $33 billion today laid out for the Department of Homeland Security, and we should look in on that a bit. But Michael's pointing to the $450 billion defense budget and saying it's not really aimed in the right direction for Homeland Security today. Is that a fair critique or not?
The general comment about candidates playing to people's fears, I think the agenda in this political cycle was set by the administration by constantly playing up the alerts, by going so far with Vice President Cheney as saying if you vote for John Kerry, you are voting for a more likely terrorist attack, which, to be honest, I think was inexcusable. The bigger issue is a valid point, though. Have either of the candidates done enough to provide a positive vision for the country going forward as regards Homeland Security? And that's a very simple question to ask for every listener out there. Do you have any idea, in the event of a terrorist attack, who to turn to for information, what to do? When I grew up, when you grew up, there was a culture in the Cold War where there were some basic, fundamental things that everybody knew. There
were
bomb
shelters,
duck and cover. That has been completely an opportunity that's been missed here, I think, by both candidates. There's an opportunity, I think, to bring the country together over this as opposed to divide it over this.
And Louise Richardson, what about the critique of the U.S. defense budget overall? $450 billion is a lot of money. New money has gone to missile defense systems. The administration cites North Korea. But given the threats today, state threats and terror threats, do we have the right balance of expenditure of resources?
No, I don't think so. Again, I quite agree with Michael here. I think we've cast the problem with terrorism as a military conflict, and so we're dealing with it in military terms. But ultimately, I think it needs to be dealt with politically. And in that respect, I think the ratio of money being spent on the Defense Department budget as opposed to the State Department, say, and in particular on public diplomacy, which is the only way we're going to appeal to the people on the ground. If one were to put together the budgets of all the different offices in Washington which spend money on public diplomacy, it comes to three-tenths of 1% of the Defense Department budget. Now, I think.
But isn't the war in Iraq itself a very large exercise in public diplomacy of a sort?
No, I don't think it's an exercise in public diplomacy at all.
It's certainly
exercise.
Shaping our relations with the region.
Right, it is. It's a military exercise. It has nothing whatever to do with terrorism. I mean, Mr. Spencer's assertion that there were links between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda doesn't make it so. They were not. There are a great many sponsors of terrorism around the world, several of them close allies of ours. The notion that this in and of itself is enough to go to war with Saddam Hussein is simply not plausible.
You're talking about, for example, Saudi Arabia, let's say, when you say sponsors of terrorism. Is that what you mean or something else?
Yes.
Who are allies?
Who are supporters of terrorism.
A lot of money's come from
Saudi
there.
Saudi Arabia, yes, indeed. Several other countries in which, you know, we have this policy of making a list of state sponsors of terrorism, and when a country gets on that list, there's mandated sanctions against them. Well, we put Iraq, we put them on the list and took them off the list to suit our political interests here, depending on whether or not we were supporting them against Iran, rather than having some sort of objective assessment of what it is that is a sponsor of terrorism and acting accordingly. But to go back to Michael's basic point, which is that it's the military is not the way we're ultimately going to solve the problem of terrorism. Yes, only the military can eliminate a regime like Afghanistan, but to go back to the Kerry-Bush conflict, and I speak as somebody who has no connection and never has had any with either campaign, Kerry, during one of the debates, said that Bush took his eye off the ball, and I think that is exactly right. If we had indeed gone in and made a real effort to rebuild Afghanistan, to try to create a democracy there, to concentrate on capturing the leadership of al-Qaeda and then rebuilding Afghanistan. But instead, we detracted all our attention to Iraq instead of focusing on one case where we really could have demonstrated the virtues of our position.
They did just have an election there.
Yes, and, you know, the country, we don't know the results yet, but the country is still hardly a democracy. An election doesn't equate with democracy. The government doesn't control most of the country, indeed.
So. We're talking about Homeland Security practically on the eve of the election, 2 weeks from tomorrow. Deborah's calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Deborah. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
To answer your question in regards to do we feel that this country is safer under the current administration or will it be safer under the Kerry administration if that ever occurs, I would say no, we're not safer now. What we've done is cultivated more terrorist groups by actually alienating our allies who are accustomed to dealing with terrorists, such as France, Germany. We need their help. We've alienated those people, this administration has, and therefore we do not know what it takes to resolve this. War is not the answer. Military attacks on one country at a time when Iran is just sitting there building up a nuclear system that is, we don't even know, we can't even account for it at this point. North Korea, the whole world now is angry at us, not only the Middle Eastern countries, but the European in the European Union.
But Deborah, let me ask you if I may, Deborah. In the years before 9/11, there was this regular drumbeat of terror attacks that grew in ambition and ferocity, whether it was the U.S. coal or embassies in Africa. I mean, you know the list, Khobar Towers. There wasn't a war going on with them in those days, and the terror was slowly, steadily mounting.
And then I can go back to the first Bush, Daddy Bush, and what we find out there is this began, we can go back to 1972, but if we go back to Daddy Bush, when the threats were coming through then, that should have been passed on to the next administration. It should have been taken serious. I do not give Clinton credit either because, like you said, in 1993, when they blew up the World Trade from the basement, that was your clue. We are not safer because no one's looked at the money, the $33 billion in Homeland Security, put it on the borders. I'm from New York originally.
Yeah.
There are borders there that you can walk across if you can swim, actually swim across, drop a bomb in Manhattan and start a whole chain reaction of buildings falling down like dominoes. That has not been done.
Deborah, we've got it, and thank you for your call. Daniel Pinto, let's look at that $33 billion just signed this morning in the Oval Office. And the list of things that it's supposed to provide for sounds impressive. Port security, Coast Guard patrols, air marshals, anti-missile technology for aircraft, foreign visitor inspections, security at chemical facilities, nuclear plants, water treatment plants, bridges, subways, tunnels. Sounds like a lot of money going to a lot of vulnerable destinations.
One of the big issues here, Tom, when looking at spending, you can always pluck from either side. This administration does a very good job rhetorically saying what they do, and they certainly have made progress. I'm not going to say that they have not done things. Clearly, $33 billion goes towards something. However, the claim by the administration that they are necessarily the best to deal with it, I have issue with simply for the fact of all the low-hanging fruit that we've talked about earlier in the show. Their claims are not untrue, but it's like buying a house with no roof, no door, and no windows.
And why isn't that stuff on there?
Fine, they've bought a door, and so they say the house is more secure, but the windows might still be open, or there may be no roof. I mean, so for all the things that they've spent on, the things that I've talked about tonight, 3 years after 9/11, are things that have not been done well or have not been done at all. So really the question is, the litmus test, if this is a referendum on this president as the Homeland Security president, if he's so serious, listeners should ask themselves, why hasn't the basic blocking and tackling been done? Now, you know, back to one of the points that was made earlier about fighting them over there.
Yeah.
One of the assumptions of that I'd like to challenge is how well we've fought them over there. And I'd like to get away from Afghanistan and Iraq for a second. under this presidency, Iran and North Korea have advanced their nuclear programs. We are less safe on that front. Under this administration, the caller made a very good point. We lack flexibility because we have not built alliances properly. That means our resources are stretched thin. We lack flexibility to deal with other problems. Mm. That makes us less safe. Credibility, and this is one thing I don't think Americans think about enough. This president claimed a right for preemptive, in an age of terrorism, preemptive attack mm-hmm. against people that might threaten us. Their test case, which is Iraq, part of the problem with lack of support is I think most of the rest of the world does not view the exercise as legitimate. So it's sort of like the boy who cried wolf. I really worry the next time that we really do face someone who does have WMD, who has strong connections to terrorist groups and may give those nuclear weapons to them.
And we can't get international support.
Exactly.
And in that case, we are not safer. Alex is calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you all?
Great, thanks.
A very difficult topic to discuss. I'd like to get back to presidential debate for a moment.
Yeah.
Kerry and Bush are both speaking about what to do about terrorism in a very different way. Bush is talking about the fact that he wants to defeat it and stomp it out, which we would all love. Kerry is saying that we're going to reduce it to a nuisance. Reducing it is the proper term. Adding nuisance to it makes him sound silly, unfortunately. Yitzhak Rabin, the former defense minister and prime minister of Israel, also use the same term, reduce it. In Israel, they know who have, you know, Israelis who have been dealing with this for a far longer time, all know that you cannot defeat terrorism, but you can do everything in your power and put everything in place to reduce it,
mm-hmm.
not ever defeat it completely.
And you're saying don't talk about it as a nuisance. It doesn't sell well. And, of course, Alex, thank you for your call. And, of course, Dick Cheney all over that today saying none of those strike me's fitting the criteria of being a nuisance. But I guess the reference here, Louise Richardson, is John Kerry's comment to the New York Times where he said eventually we'd like to get – we should aim toward getting terrorism back in the status of nuisance. And he appeared to be opposing that to a Bush view, which is a kind of Manichaean, epical struggle of light and dark kind of to the death or maybe perpetually. What is the right way of looking at this struggle with terrorism and the threat to national security there?
Well, I assume that what Mr. Kerry had in mind, his words were not well chosen, as I'm sure he recognizes. And given how much any of these candidates speak, one can hardly blame them for that. But I would say what I assume he had in mind was the experience of other countries in dealing with terrorism. A country like England, for example, the United Kingdom, which lived under a threat of terrorism from the IRA for 30 years. And in Britain, protecting oneself against terrorism became a nuisance. One couldn't carry bags someplace. There are no public trash bins available, as was true in Paris and the campaign against Algerian radicals there. So I think that was what he had in mind, so that we're not constantly worried about some apocalyptic threat, but rather that we are just constantly on our guard.
I mean, isn't that in itself, the word may sound not stentorian, but isn't that, wouldn't it be very desirable if terrorism we could just see as a nuisance? Again, if we'd succeeded to that extent, wouldn't that be a kind of victory, Louise?
Oh, well, of course it would, yes. I mean, the language I would use is not defeat terrorism, because we never will. Terrorism is a tactic. It'll be used as long as it's effective. But what I think our goal ought to be to contain terrorism, to keep the groups small, to keep them isolated. Once they're small and once they're isolated, we can go after them with our special forces, with our intelligence, and with our standard legal proceedings. Once they're small, the problem is if they become mass-based movements, then they can do us serious harm. And that's what we've got to protect against. And that's why I think the goal ought to be to contain them. But that's why this is ultimately a political rather than a military goal, because they will only remain small if politically they are not able to persuade people to the legitimacy of their claims or the attractiveness of their ideology. And thus far, it seems to me that the real strength of al-Qaeda is twofold. It's A, the fact that they have this ideology that so many people find persuasive, and B, they have this extraordinary organizational flexibility that they've been able to morph from one type of organization into another.
And you're saying so far the Bush administration, in some dimension, helping them do that. Daniel Prieto, we've just got 20 seconds here, mm-hmm. but a last thought on where we stand and how voters ought to think.
Last thought is I'd like to bring up this notion of a pre-9/11 mindset. It is my view that the Bush administration has the pre-11 mindset, and that is why they have not done a good job dealing with things domestically in the homeland. They think states are the prime actors. They miss the fact that terrorists are sub-state groups. They also don't believe in governance. I think Republicans struggle with that, and that's why they've missed
a lot of stuff.
So look
to the nuts and bolts and tighten them up. Daniel Prieto, Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, wonderful to have you tonight. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Louise Richardson, Executive Dean of the Radcliffe Institute for Advanced Study, marvelous to have you. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.